Well, thank you, Mayor, and thank you all. I'm really dazzled and impressed that you all made time to be here today. I am. I take it as witness to the power of your civic commitment, the power of new ideas in public life, the power of free food. For the food which brought you all together, but also for this inestimable honor, I want to thank the people of Manhattan Institute. I hope everyone here is thoroughly familiar with them. If you're not, you ought to be. I try to read every word one of their people writes. And I've learned an awful lot from them, consciously and unconsciously, or subconsciously, I suppose, over the course of time. I've always marveled. I mean, imagine now, it is the Manhattan Institute, after all, founded in eponymously, as they say, in New York City. And that alone tells you something about them. You know, it'd be easy to be fatalistic about, it certainly was back when they were founded, the pre-Giuliani days and so forth, about a place like Manhattan. Well, I remember that when Bill Buckley ran for mayor, the media said, what's the first thing you do if you actually got elected? He said, demand a recount. Manhattan never took a fatalistic view. They believed that places, and it's hard to, you know, roll your tape back mentally to what New York was. It has its struggles today, but just remember what it was. And this, there was a time when people said places like that were hopeless. Manhattan never bought that. And they planted their intellectual flag there and had an awful lot to do with good things that happened there and then that spread elsewhere. And that's a really important role in our public life, more important than what people who actually hold office all too often are doing. It's interesting to be honored for innovation in government. Yeah, I want you to think about that for a little bit. There's a certain impudent optimism about that whole idea, innovation and government, in the same sentence. I mean, do they even belong? You know, it's. I wonder if they're giving an award this year for the smartest investment banker. You know, I don't know. Deepest thinker in Hollywood. I mean, I'm trying to come up with something as anomalous, as innovator in government. I mean, Goldsmith was one, but I mean, it's just not something that occurs in the state of nature. And when you think about this, there's a reason for it. It is not in the nature of government to be innovative. Why? Primarily because government is a monopoly. It's about the last monopoly. A lot of us grew up and monopolies were all over the place. You got all your phones from Ma Bell, you can only get your electricity from one place, so forth. Those are all gone, thank goodness. Been a great thing for the economic vibrancy of our country and the world. But government, all too often, is the last monopoly, and it behaves like one. Monopolies, by their nature, mistreat their customers and overcharge them. And whatever they're known for, it is not breakthrough thinking. There's no pressure for them to do it. There's no competitor going to take you out. State of Indiana went broke a few years ago, but it didn't go out of business. And there was nobody there to displace it, as all your businesses have to constantly worry about. So innovation in government is a interesting concept to think about at all. When I do, I really would define it slightly differently. Most of what passes, most of what Manhattan, I guess, has spotted out here in Indiana, in that narrow strip of provinces between the Brooklyn Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. Is not exactly it's not the kind of innovation that happens in the great businesses of this day, or private enterprises. Only very, very rarely is it a totally new, brilliant idea, technologically or otherwise superior to anything else that's around. No, what passes for innovation in government, I would more often call inconspicuous plagiarism. And if you just look at the things we've done, most of them only deserve that label. A lot of the, and by the way, I've encouraged our people cheerfully to be plagiarists. I mean, first of all, that's why the federal system was set up to encourage plagiarism and experimentation, laboratories, as we say, of democracy. And a lot of the things we've done in Indiana were simply copied from other places who had tried them first. They were innovative to Indiana, first-time things for us, but in all honesty, they weren't new elsewhere. I mean, we've modernized the procurement of this state and saved tens of millions of dollars, but we were hardly the first state to see that opportunity. A great example is tax amnesty, which was the biggest single step through which we paid back the schools and local governments the money that had been coercively borrowed from them when the state went broke. Tax amnesty was a hot topic, very controversial in Indiana. Well, I can understand why. It had only been done in 43 states before we before we got around to it. Now, I want to give credit to John Eckert and the great people at the Department of Revenue, because there was this innovative component. They looked closely at those 43 states, found out exactly what worked and what didn't, and I think advanced the art and ran by the best program. It raised four times what the legislative forecaster said it would. Not 65 million, but 250 some million dollars. But it wasn't a brand new idea. A lot of the things we've done have been cheerfully copied from the private sector. I'm often approached by people who will say, usually in about the same words, boy, it's great to see a businessman. It's great to see government run like a business. And I thank them, but I remonstrate just a little bit. And I'll tell them, listen, government is not a business. The founders didn't draw up the game plan quite that way. It's not a business, but it can be more business-like in so many ways. And we have looked for those ways. Things as simple, I mean, every business today has long ago realized that it ought to focus on what it does well, the buzzword being core competencies, and hire somebody else to do the rest of that. You see Lilly doing this in big way these days, at Greenfield, all your businesses have done it. Of course, this morning we celebrated the growth of a very interesting company called TriMedics here, spun out of one of our local hospitals, and now is the outsourcer, is the provider of equipment, maintenance, and management services to hospital systems all over the place. Such an obvious thing, but not always in government, where there's been a self-interest sometimes in patronage or the political dues that flow from it, or just in keeping things as they are, again, without any pressure of competition. But whatever the core competencies of Indiana state government are, they are not custodial services, and they're not printing, and they're not mailing, handling the mail, and they're not cooking food in prisons and things like this, which we have hired Hoosiers always in the private sector, and saved to do better than we could do it as a government, and saved an awful lot of money. But it's not innovation, except maybe in our context. We have brought the simplest notion, I think, of measurement of performance to government. And I have found this to be at the heart of improvement. Every business I know has scorecards and measurements and charts on the wall, and that's the constant search we all know for continual improvement. It's really important in government. There is no accountability generally in a monopoly unless you implant it there somehow. And the only way I've ever found is to keep score, is to establish very clear objectives. first question is, should your agency be there at all? Is whatever you're doing really something government should do? And if so, is this the only way to do it? And if so, how do I know you're doing a good job? As we used to say in business, if you're not keeping score, you're just practicing. And so we have these red, yellow, green ratings, and we plaster them on the walls, and we talk about them when we get together. And then, now here's a blinding innovation for you. Starting 3 years ago, we started paying people more in Indiana state government if they did a good job and less if they didn't. Isn't that brilliant? Now there's innovation for you. Not at any table here, but where we live, it was, and wasn't easy to do. Today, 30,000 families on its Hoosier families on the way to 130,000 have the peace of mind of health insurance, many for the first time. Many of them are treating illnesses that were going unattended before. Everywhere I go these days, somebody wants to come up and hug, get a hug, give a hug, because of the program we call HIP. Well, it may look innovative in among government health insurance programs, but it's HSAs for low-income people. It's a program that was devised in the private sector, and we are now the state with the broadest penetration of such policies in state government, and the first with a health insurance, a program for the uninsured that is built on the principle that a consumer with their own skin in the game will ask the right questions, will think, you know, is there a generic drug for that? Didn't I just pay for that same test? And that people, even people of modest means, have the human dignity and the autonomy to know their own interests, to be trusted with making their own decisions. There isn't anything very innovative about either the philosophical or the mechanical aspects of the HIP program, but it's new in government, and I guess, again, that's what passes for innovation in our world. Oh, or lastly, asset management. Very common in business. There isn't. Every farmer that ever was looked to see if he had a back 40 that wasn't producing, and if somebody wanted to lease it from him, who thought they could get a better return or a better crop or a better something. And the farmer thought that he could take that money and invest it in a new piece of equipment or maybe a better piece of ground. That's just what you do. Only when government looks to do the same thing do people find it startling or unusual. When we came to office, we started looking for the inventory of state assets. Well, that was a fruitless endeavor. They didn't know what they owned or why. They didn't know how many cars. They didn't know how many planes. They didn't know what real property. This is, of course, monopolies, government in particular, are very poor stewards of assets. There's no ownership. There's no shareholding ownership. There's no personal ownership. Have you ever noticed that in the history of the world, no one has ever washed a rental car? So government in Indiana did a pretty crummy job of taking care of our forests. And it did a pretty poor job of running a toll road. It was losing money. I won't tell you the whole story. I think you know something about it. But we found a way to solve a real world problem. And at least for the next several years. We didn't solve this problem for all time, but Indiana's in a unique position today because we found a way to turn a toll road losing money into almost $4 billion, no taxing, no borrowing, all to be reinvested in permanent public assets for the future of the growth of this state. I've told some of my friends in business, because occasionally the question comes up, well, was that really a good deal? So here's one little business tip to take with you. Anybody should walk into your office and offer you 60 times EBITDA for your company. Don't say, let me sleep on it. Please don't say, give me the weekend. Grab the nearest pen. So we did. Now, I didn't find that at all innovative. Incidentally, in other countries of the world, not much done yet in the U.S., but this is common. elsewhere if you just keep your eyes and ears open. So I didn't consider it that particularly unique original. Steve touched on something very, very important, and this is where I'd like to leave the subject. Innovation, even if the term is stretched, even if it's not really appropriate in government, is extraordinarily important. But it does not come naturally. And I would submit to you that, it comes more naturally if you start with an appreciation and a recognition that the innovation that really matters is that which happens in a free society, where people are free to pursue their dreams, where money, where capital is free to go in pursuit, not directed politically, but to go in pursuit of new ideas and best ideas, where people have an ethic of risk-taking and entrepreneurship, and that this, ultimately, is the innovation that powers the human future. And the best government is that government which recognizes that and then tries to structure itself to foster that sort of opportunity, that sort of hope that comes from those risks, that minority of risks that are taken successfully. We're trying to be that kind of state in Indiana. Those are the kind of people I was with this morning at TriMedics. Those are the kind of people I'll be with in a happy city of Muncie in a couple hours when we welcome a great company from abroad, bringing not just a big new factory, but its North American headquarters, their first venture, major capital investment in the United States, to Muncie, Indiana, to build generators for windmills. It's the kind of risk-taking that we see in the life sciences businesses and in the software businesses and in the orthopedics device businesses in which Indiana is now a world leader. And if we are ever mindful that this is the innovation that matters most, then I think we will, without thinking about it, approach our public tasks and our public stewardship with a little bit of the same sense of trying the new, searching for the best practice, continually insisting on self-improvement, and maybe once in a while actually being innovative in the literal sense of that term. We will, by revering innovation where it matters most, we will be naturally drawn to emulate it. I don't submit that your state government has done anything more than that these last 3.5 years. So many of the people, Ryan Kitchell, Betsy Burdick, Ron Stiver, and others, Chris Johnston, who are here, did the real work. Johnston, the pest who's been measuring every department for us now for 3.5 years. Stiver, who more than any other person is the architect of now the best Bureau of Motor Vehicles in America. What a man bites dog story that is. Kitchell, like Stiver, somebody I pirated out of that bottomless reservoir of talent around here known as Eli Lilly and Company, and who's helped us watch every nickel and invest wisely and do great transactions and somehow struggle our way to a AAA credit rating when most of the states of this country were headed the opposite direction. These are the people who earned any recognition we get, but again, they did so only because we remember what the work that is truly important in this world and recognize that public service done right is that which enables free men and women to flourish, to pursue their dreams, and to innovate in the literal sense that matters most. Thank you all very much.